Hello, today we have Brexit flat chat style. Not the British thing of leaving Europe, but the people from the Opal Tower who were told they had to leave their hotel accommodation after breakfast yesterday and move back into the tower. And later on we'll be going back and discovering what happens when you take the developer to court to have your defects fixed. I'm Jimmy Thompson and this is the Flat Chat Wrap. The other morning, I got a call from ABC Radio. It turns out that some of the residents of the Opal Tower in Olympic Park had been told that their apartments were fit for them to go back to, and so the developers would not be paying for their accommodation after breakfast on Sunday. It's Brexit Sydney style. This is how my interview on ABC Radio went.
This is Breakfast with Josh Zepps on ABC Radio Sydney.
So, I mean, how would you feel? The building you live in gets evacuated because of concerns that it's not safe to live in. So you're sent to a motel. A safety review then says that, oh, some parts are actually safe to occupy. You don't really feel reassured, but the builder tells you, well, you've kind of got it because we're not going to pay for food or accommodation anymore. That exactly is the scenario that residents of 74 apartments are currently finding themselves in. There are reports that some of them are planning a class action, but what are some of their other options? Jimmy Thompson is a freelance journalist who writes for the Sydney Morning Herald's Domain. He has a column entitled Flat Chat. His website is flat/chat.com. Jimmy, thanks for being here.
Hi, Josh. How are you going?
Excellent. What rights does a person who doesn't want to move back in but no longer gets any money for room or food have?
Well, not many, to be honest. If the building has been declared safe, and the reports I'm reading say that the owners' corporation, or the body corporate, as it used to be called, and their own engineers have said that these apartments are safe, if that's true, then basically you don't have much to go on. There are various legal channels they can pursue. They all take a long time, and there are no guarantees at the end of them. So it's tricky. I mean, if you're really putting yourself out on a limb, if you'd say, well, I don't feel safe, I'm not going back.
But it's the developers. Am I getting this right? It's the people who are appointed by the developer itself who ultimately have the right to say whether or not people have to move back in. It's not some kind of independent body that's commissioned by the state government.
Well, you know, every building in the city has to be approved for habitation by, like, the local council has to give a certificate of habitation, which presumably this building has had.
Yeah, but it probably had that before all of the troubles too.
Yes, exactly. If the independent engineers are saying this building is safe for habitation, and or these apartments, and this is specifically, it's something like 74 apartments, and they're saying it's safe to go back into them, it's very hard. I mean, I can understand totally that people might go, well, hey, you're saying it's safe, but you said it was safe before we moved in, and then you said it wasn't safe. How do we know? I don't feel safe. And that's a big part of living in an apartment or living in any house, that you feel safe. And if people don't feel safe, then they're quite entitled to say, well, you know, I'm going to need more proof. But that's the developer saying, well, no, we don't need it to give you any more time out of the building. And that's where the problem is.
I mean, when you say that independent engineers have said that it's safe, that is the key word, isn't it? Independent. I mean, the question on the minds of the people who are no longer going to have their accommodation and food paid for by the developer would be, is there not a vested interest in someone who the developer themselves commission in encouraging us to move in perhaps somewhat prematurely? It's not like this is a totally impartial, independent affair. If the engineers are getting their money from the developer who doesn't want to pay people for their room and food anymore. I mean, am I being too cynical?
Well, no, because I don't think it's possible to be too cynical when you're dealing with developers.
When you're talking about New South Wales real estate.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, look, I'm reading the report in the Sydney Morning Herald, so I guess I have to believe it, that says it's the body corporate's engineers. Now, body corporate, is not a term that we use anymore, or we're supposed to use anymore. If the body, if the owner's corporation, that's the owner's engineers, say the units are safe to occupy, now that's engineers that have been paid for or hired by the owners collectively, then you kind of think, well, we've got to go along with what our guys say. These aren't, there's, according to this report, these are not independent engineers. These are engineers hired by the owners as a group. But there is a whole other issue here. You've got the owners' corporation have definitely got legs on a case to get the whole building fixed, you know, within the 6 years. That's not a question, really. But there's also the loss of value. You know, and that is very murky under the law. And I think that is where the class action is coming in, where the owners are getting together and saying, okay, we can get the building fixed, but how are we going to fix the obvious loss in value to our apartments?
How do you even quantify that, though?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because do you recall the fire in the La Crosse building down in Melbourne, the one that started the whole flammable cladding thing?
Right, yep.
Somebody just a couple of weeks ago released a study saying that, on average, the apartments there had lost 19% in value. Now, that's not to say that it's the same as will happen at the Opal, but it certainly creates a benchmark of about 20% in lost value. Because, you know, for the next year, you know, anybody who's trying to sell or rent an apartment in that building, and people, most people, especially in this market, are just going to go, I don't think so. You know, like there's other options there.
That's right.
I don't need to go there.
Also, I mean, the problem with measuring a loss in value, and we're speaking, by the way, to Jimmy Thompson, who's a freelance journalist who writes for the Sydney Morning Herald's Domain, about the fact that the developer of the Opal Tower, that problematic tower that people still aren't able to occupy all of the apartments in, are now no longer having their room and food paid for. Basically, yesterday's breakfast was the last thing that the developer's going to pick up the tab on, and then the people who do own apartments that are claimed to be okay and safe are going to have to move back in or do their own thing. Part of the problem here, of course, Jimmy, is that you're operating on comparing reality with a sort of a counterfactual, because the property market's always moving in various ways anyway. As you said, we're seeing a softening of the market anyway, and I'm sure in coming years apartment prices are going to go back up again anyway. So, you know, how is their movement? You're trying to compare it to a hypothetical universe in which this had never happened in order to know what the impact of this on the property prices actually is.
Yeah, a bit early in the morning for hypothetical universes, Josh.
We were talking to a radio astronomer at 6:15 this morning. Get up earlier, Jimmy. So what's the upshot? What's the upshot of all this? Where do you see this going?
Look, in the very long term, I think everything will settle down. I mean, the building is probably, the way these buildings are constructed, it's a core. You know, and if you think of the bit in the middle of a new building that has all the lifts and things in it, that's a pretty solid concrete core, usually, and everything else comes flying off that and is supported on the way up like a kind of Jenga thing.
Yeah.
And that will stand. I mean, there's just in King's Cross where I live, there's a hotel where recently has just been stripped back to that core and has now reappeared as this fabulous new space-age apartment block. That's how solid those cores are. So the building itself will keep standing, I think, I hope, for a long, long time. What has crumbled is people's confidence in the building, and that is that 20% or more loss in value. So I think what will happen, look, I quite cheekily suggested that within the next year or so this building will be turned into an Airbnb hotel, not by deliberate planning, just by people going, how am I going to get my money back?
I don't want to live there, rent it out to some Danish tourists who don't know about this fiasco.
They've never heard of it.
They're not going to Google it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, wonderful. Jimmy, great to talk to you. Thanks for filling us in.
Can I just say one more thing,
please,
Josh?
Please.
I have been evacuated from the Domain in the Sydney Morning Herald. I now write for the Financial Review on a Saturday. But
oh, sorry about that. My apologies.
Flatchat.com.au is still alive and kicking, but it's great to talk to you.
Flatchat.com.au, Jimmy Thompson, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, mate. That's Jimmy Thompson talking about the fact that, yeah, if you have a place in the Opal Tower and you didn't want to move back in, tough.
Hi. If I can drag you away from the trials and tribulations of apartment living for a moment. When I'm not editing the Flat Chat website, I'm also a published author of both fiction and non-fiction books, a screenwriter, a university lecturer in literature, and a travel writer. Using that experience and some fabulous books and movies as our guides, I want to take travelers to the Vietnam that I know and love. I'll be using real-life locations to bring some of my favorite films and books to life for you as we travel through Vietnam on my romance and intrigue tour. It's going to be the trip of a lifetime, and it will be luxury all the way. To find out all you need to know about this unique experience, click on the ad at the foot of the Flat Chat webpages, or email me on mail@jimmythompson.com and ask me a question. Okay, thanks for listening. Back to the podcast. Hello. Well, we're back again. Like we promised you last week, we'd talk about a defects case that happened in our building. And I'm joined again by Sue Williams. Hello, Sue.
Hi, Jimmy.
So this is going back in time. And it was a painful experience, I think, for everybody to some extent, wasn't it?
It certainly was. I think it's one of those things, once you've been through it once, you never want to go through it again.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning of this process. Last week we spoke about this building where the developers had offered something like $86,000 for all the defects to be written off. You never come back. That's it. And the owners' corporation, having had a coup and had got rid of their chairman and whatever, and got rid of most of the committee, said no, we want a proper assessment done of the defects. I mean, when you had that done, what did you find?
Well, we got a new building management company in and they went through everything very, very carefully. And they brought in experts and they discovered defects worth around $6 million. And the kind of defects they found was snotting, which was an interesting word. I'd never come across that one before. But it kind of means you've got cavities, you've got two brick walls, you've got a cavity in between. But the builders on our building had been chucking their rubble down the middle of the two brick walls. So yep. Therefore the rubbish in the middle, kind of just builders masonry and old chip packets and things, was allowing water that went into the outside brick wall, it was carrying it through into the inside.
Right.
So people were finding their apartments were getting damp.
Right. Well, I remember some people had water and heavy rain, literally water pouring into the apartments on some occasions. What else was there?
Yep, we found the balcony glass on all our balconies was too small for the frames. That was a real problem because we'd actually had two pieces of glass fall out onto the street. One had fallen out onto the street below and one had fallen out into our own common property. And, you know, when you've got glass falling from a height, obviously that's extremely dangerous. If anybody had been walking past, goodness me, it would have been horrendous.
And you're talking about something like 1,000 panes of glass across the whole of the building, if not more. So the risk factor was massive.
Absolutely.
What else was there?
Also, we had a number of ceilings that started coming away from the slab above them.
Right.
So they were, one ceiling I think had fallen down completely. And, I mean, I'm no building expert or anything, but I was shocked at how much crap, when a ceiling falls down, is created. Yeah. There's so much dust and dirt, and it's not just a case of a little bit of ceiling falling down. The whole apartment
is
trashed.
And this is in a relatively new building. So.
That's right, yeah. So you can imagine, you know, in a building that's been going on for a bit longer, when the ceiling falls down. there was a crack beneath the pool, and at one point we kind of worried that the pool, which was above the car park, the swimming pool, might end up in the car park, which would be an interesting facility for any building to have. You get out of your car, just dive straight in the pool. The tiles in our lobby were substandard. They were meant to be, you know, really fabulous kind of marble effect tiles, and, you know, they weren't very good at all. And we had decorative louvers in the building which were falling apart. And when we started to investigate them, some of them were certainly fashioned from concrete. Others were mere styrofoam painted in a concrete colour.
Right.
So they started cracking and in some cases actually snapping and falling apart.
So all of this was a result of the developer cutting costs. Is that fair to say? That, you know, even down to the builders dropping the rubble into in between the cavity, it was all about trying to save money and cut corners.
I think so, and also just a lack of supervision, a lack of care. I think sometimes developers develop a building and then they just kind of want to get out of there. So they kind of want to do everything very quickly and they can sell off the apartments and move away.
So you've discovered all these defects in the building. I mean, there's many. Some of them are big, some of them are small. Some of them weren't even noticed as defects, like the bells that announced the arrival of lifts were industrial size things. So everybody and the entire floor would get woken every time somebody arrived in the lift. But you've got this whole range of stuff. So what happens next?
Well, first of all, we talked to the developers thinking that they might be reasonable and tried to discuss the findings we'd had. We gave them our reports and they refused point blank to enter discussions with us. So we then had to engage some lawyers.
Mm.
So we engaged the lawyers who did investigation of their own as well. Then they said, well, we think you've got a very good case. But we obviously went into negotiation with the developer, with the lawyers, and they took it a little bit more seriously. The trouble was we'd sit at a table with them, we'd discuss the whole situation, and they would say, oh, yes, we're taking this very seriously and we're about to make you an offer. And we'd come away from that meeting thinking, fantastic, something's happening, we're making real progress. And then a few days later or a few weeks later, a letter would come, and it was the developer's summary of what had been discussed at the meeting, and their summary was completely and utterly different from what we thought it was. So it kind of became a real time-wasting measure, really.
Yeah.
I think they were just trying to kind of wear us down.
Right. I mean, let's be honest. You were a committee of 9 people. None of you, I'm guessing, were experts in building or building law. Is that fair to say?
Yep, absolutely.
So you were very much dependent on the lawyers and the expert witnesses or the experts who came in and did the surveys. Did that lead to any specific problems? Were you a united group?
Well, we were at first, and I think the lack of progress and how long everything was dragging on started to kind of reveal real cracks within the community. Because when you've got things going wrong with the building and you're not actually fixing them because you can't actually fix them until, you know, you've got the defects, the developers to agree to fix them, then the building starts to look pretty awful.
Yeah.
One point we had stickers on all the balcony glass saying, you know, this is dangerous. So, you know, the building looks terrible. People start getting really angry. We actually changed our lawyers once because it wasn't going very well. So we got new lawyers in who were very experienced in building problems but had little experience in strata.
Right.
Because this was quite early on when people were buying off the plan apartments. I think it's a bit better now.
You'd hope so. I mean, I remember the stickers because the lawyers didn't trust the owners of the residents to put the stickers on their own balconies. So they employed abseilers to dangle down the sides of the building and put the stickers on from the outside, which just to a lot of people in the building, they thought this was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was quite bizarre, really. And I think because the lawyers were operating in a certain way, they kept saying all the time that we had to be very secretive about what we were doing. So while we as an EC wanted to be completely transparent with all our owners, they were saying, no, we can't tell them about this happening or this happening. So lots of owners were left in the dark. And then they started getting really restless. And meantime, our negotiations were kind of getting nowhere. And owners were saying, well, what's happening? And the lawyers were saying, well, you can't really tell them.
Yeah.
And in the negotiations as well, I mean, I remember one particular day we went in to negotiate and our chairperson had been having tests for blood pressure, high blood pressure.
Right.
So he was wearing a device that whenever his blood pressure grew too high, it would sound an alarm. And we were sitting there in this room with all these lawyers and us, and every so often his alarm would go off. We which I think was, you know, was manna from heaven for the developers. But for us, it kind of made us look very stressed and anxious didn't help us at all either.
Yeah, it was like having a lie detector attached to you when you're in the middle of a negotiation. So the negotiations are moving forward. Where was the building manager in all this?
Well, the lawyers had told us, although our building manager was very experienced in defects, our lawyers instructed us not to involve him. We weren't allowed to even tell him what was going on often because they said we had to keep it within a very small group of the executive committee. We weren't allowed to kind of tell anyone else. So it was kind of bizarre because he could have been really helpful. But we were in the position of the lawyers telling us things and we had to just do what they said.
Yeah.
But, you know, it got to a point where one owner became so fed up with it, he actually started demanding that we fix his defects first.
Right.
We fix them before the developer, you know, before everything was sorted out. And he ended up taking us to court to demand that we fix his defects.
I remember because part of his report for his court case was what would happen if the maximum number of people allowed on his terrace suddenly surged forward towards the balcony.
At a party.
Like suddenly, there's fireworks and everybody rushes forward. Yeah, which in a way, you know, is kind of reasonable, even though he was being just a little bit selfish.
But it's hard. I mean, as everyone knows in a strata community, it's pretty hard to maintain momentum among a lot of people all at once. When you've got owners selling up and new owners coming in and you having to explain the issues to them, but you still don't want to go too public with the issues, it's a really difficult thing to negotiate.
Okay, so you've had all these reports done. Your lawyers have been having people dangling off your building, putting stickers on the balconies. You go to court. What happens?
Okay, well, the court case started off okay, and then because of the feeling of disgruntled owners, we had a couple of owners came to watch and actually sit with the other side, sit with the lawyers who were defending the developers as a way of kind of showing us, you know, we had to be really careful because they were very willing to give information to the developers if we didn't kind of help them along.
That's bizarre. Why would somebody do that?
Well, exactly. I guess the level of dissatisfaction and anger and frustration can't be underestimated, really. But yeah, it was really an awful thing.
So these were people who were not having their point of view heard.
They didn't feel they were.
So they felt, if you're not with us, you're against us.
That's basically right. And so we didn't know at one point if they were feeding information to the developers against us.
Right.
And that's a really difficult situation to be in. I mean, I make it sound like a world war, really, you know, with people, spies on both sides. But in fact, that's often what it was like.
So how long has this been going on for, this whole defects?
I think it was going on for about 3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
So there were two stages in this, if I recall. The first one was to establish whether or not the developers were obliged to pay for repairs. Okay, how did that go?
Yes, we won that. Yes.
Right.
The court ruled, the judge ruled that there were defects and they should be fixed by the developer.
Wow. Terrific.
It was wonderful. It was a great celebration.
Dancing in the street.
Yes,
just
but it was
don't
short-lived.
Get too close to the balcony.
That's right. So then the developers came to us and made an offer of $3
million. So this is the second stage, which is what they call the quantum, where,
that's right,
where they have to establish how much they're going to pay. They offered you $3 million. What did your lawyers say?
Well, the lawyers said, look, $3 million is a good offer, but don't forget your defects have been assessed that costing you $6 million.
Right.
So if you accept $3 million, you're going to have to find another $3 million from somewhere. Don't forget that. And also, there was a deadline on the developer's offer. They wanted us to agree to that offer within a couple of days.
Right.
That was the deadline.
But my strata brain clicks in here, and I'm thinking, are you even allowed as a committee to accept an offer like that?
Technically, we're not. Because we have to call an EGM and we have to have a certain period of time to give owners notice.
7 days,
Yep. And we have to ask owners what they think and ask them if they'd like to accept that offer.
Right.
So we didn't have the time to do that.
So the deadline passed and...
Well, our hands were really tied. We couldn't accept the $3 million, really.
Yeah.
And the developers, we asked them to give us more time so we could call an EGM, and they said no. Right. The offer's off the table unless
I think it
you
was
agree.
Midnight that night, wasn't it? Was it a couple of days or was it midnight that night? No, I've got a feeling you went and had to go into court the next day.
Oh, it could be. Yeah. It's just I've tried to block that memory out,
I think. Don't blame you. So you go to court the next day. You've been told that the developers are supposed to pay for the defects. And the expert witnesses have said the defects are worth $6 million. What happened then?
That night we organised an emergency meeting of the EC and just discussed it and said, what do we all think? And in the end, we decided, look, you know, if we accepted the $3 million, firstly, we weren't legally entitled to accept the $3 million. And secondly, we felt that the owners would be really angry with us because there's another $3 million worth of work to do. So we'd have to raise huge special levies for that.
Right.
So we decided we really had no option but to turn the offer down.
Right. And then you go to court.
And then we went back to court to continue to try to establish the quantum of damages. So that day, our expert witness came forward to establish how much each defect was worth.
Now, this guy, if I recall, was reputedly the expert of experts on defects claims in strata. Is that reasonable?
That's absolutely right. Our lawyers had highly recommended him and he'd spent a long time getting together his reports, and everything seemed to be, you know, fantastic. All he had to do was stand up in court and say it was worth this much and this much and this much.
And
we felt pretty confident at that point that it would all be over soon.
And what happened?
It was a disaster. The expert witness went to water when he was cross-examined by the developer's QCs. And it was just like the most awful presentation and performance in court I think I've ever had the misfortune to watch. It was a man completely going to water. And he was just so unimpressive, it wasn't funny. We just watched him with horror, to be honest.
This was the typical train wreck happening before.
That's right, absolutely. And still to this day, we have no idea what happened. Was he having a nervous breakdown before our eyes? You know, some of us kind of wondered if he'd been paid off by the developer.
Yeah.
Look, we don't know. But it was a terrible performance. And then the judge came back with a ruling that we hadn't actually proved the quantum of damages. So therefore, he awarded us, I think, maybe about $1 million.
Yeah.
Which was enough to cover our court costs and nothing left over to actually fix all the defects that we were in court for.
Wow. Just sensational.
It was horrific.
It was the perfect storm, wasn't it? So you've 3 years, you've been battling against the developers, you've been trying to get to this point, you've been telling the owners, trust us, the lawyers say this is the way to do it, we can't tell you what's happening because the lawyers say we've got to keep a lid on this. You go to court and lose spectacularly. How did the community respond?
Not very happily. I think we were all devastated. We just couldn't believe what had happened. And when it was discovered that we had actually turned down an offer for $3 million,
You
can imagine how angry people were.
Yeah.
Because in retrospect, obviously, if our lawyers had advised us differently, we should have gone for that $3 million.
Yeah.
But we had no way of knowing that the expert witness with our claim for $6 million would do so badly.
Mm. Yeah, you would have thought at the very least you would have got a piece of that. But, I mean, I remember sitting in the meeting after, you know, where the whole thing had fallen down, and the venom and bile among certain people. I remember sitting next to this woman who turned to me and said, we're going to get Sue Williams today. And it turned out this woman had already sold her apartment. She just wanted to be there to vent her spleen, I think is the thing. I also remember another woman, I shouldn't say too much, but stood up and accused you of embezzling funds.
Yeah, it would have been funny if it wasn't so
tragic,
ghastly, really, I suppose. And one person put up notices in the lift about me making certain allegations, and insinuations. Yeah. It was just a really nasty atmosphere. Someone else shouted at me in the street and called me name. It was just, it was the worst side of Strata that you can ever imagine, really. I think I saw the really ugly side. But, you know, people were really upset. They were frustrated. They were angry. And, you know, they had no one to really focus that anger on apart from us, our committee members, really.
Yeah.
You know, so we just had to go about and fix the defects ourselves.
Yeah. And that was your last venture in the committee, wasn't it?
That's right. I resigned shortly after that.
If you were in a building with defects and the developer wasn't, because we mentioned Opal and it sounds like the developer there is going to do the right thing. But if you were in, there are plenty of other buildings around New South Wales with defects. The law, strata law, has changed since then, and there's now the defects bond, and there's now a recognition that there will be defects in a building. Do you think now you would approach things differently if you were in that situation again?
I think if you'd have asked me that question just after we had failed, I would have said, never again, never, ever, ever. But now, a few years on, the situation has improved tremendously, I think. There are an awful lot of good lawyers out there with real experience in strata defect rectification.
Yeah.
And we know their names. They have great track records. The government, I think, is very much on the side. Laws favour developers.
They're more on the side.
They're a bit more aware of the issues for consumers.
Yeah.
And I think developers are a little bit more wary about getting bad publicity about their buildings. So I would say I would go through that process again, but I think I would be a lot wiser and a lot sharper in the way I operated.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, that was also long ago. We don't have any off-the-plan apartments on the portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any defect claims coming up, and we're moving ahead happy, still in the same building.
Yeah, and I mean, also these days, there's lots of different avenues to fund defect rectification as well. You can get strata loans. You don't have to raise special levies.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of different ways of trying to get defects rectified and paying for them.
If you have to pay for them yourself.
Yeah.
But, you know, in these days where companies just go bust and then...
Yeah, but you can also get strata loan to pay for your court costs too.
Right.
So that can help, especially small buildings.
Yeah.
You always have to be wary of a developer kind of declaring bankruptcy and then appearing again as a Phoenix company under another name. That can always happen.
You almost bought another apartment off the plan a few years ago, didn't you?
I did. And in the end, I decided not to. But it wasn't really because of defects, because that was by a good developer as well. And I would always buy from a good developer.
Yeah.
An off-the-plan apartment. I wouldn't buy from a company I've never heard of who seemed to be only doing one apartment building, and that's the first one they've ever done.
Yeah.
I would be much more wary about those companies than of companies with a good track record who are happy to talk about their buildings and are proud of their buildings.
Yeah.
And I would kind of look at those developers a lot more closely now.
Okay, thanks very much, Sue. I'm sorry about taking you down that painful road again, but I think it's been probably very helpful to a lot of our listeners.
I hope so too. Okay.
Well, thanks again to Sue for taking us through a period of her life, which is obviously still very painful in her memory. And my thanks to Josh Zepps for that spot on ABC Radio talking about the Opal Tower. Next week, we'll have another radio show, a call-in on Radio National. And in the meantime, you can catch up with us on flat-chat.com.au. Talk to you next week. Bye.